There's a point in life where you're like, I'm just sick of making excuses. I'm sick of not holding myself accountable. And you want to make a promise to yourself and prove it to yourself that you can keep this promise. So I didn't go and sit in front of a mirror. You got one of these like, I'm looking at myself kind of moment. And I said, what is it that I can control? I'm tired of making excuses. Some of the stuff that happened in my life were valid excuses. But why do I have to make excuses about it? Why don't I focus my energy on what I can control? And what I can control was my ability of getting up and taking action. And the first thing that hit me, what am I afraid of that I want to try? Running was the first thing that hit me. This is the thing you're afraid of. Why don't you try to tackle it? Just give yourself 2 weeks. And I knew immediately at that point that I was going to succeed because I had zero pressure.
Legends, that's Hella Sidibe, or Hella Good on Instagram. And he's an inspiring man, and you're about to learn why. Hey guys, welcome to the Epic Table podcast. Couple of shout outs and birthdays. One is Eric Hall, a legend who's lost a ton of weight following center, just along with just people like myself, and hearing him and his family, Michelle, reach out constantly has been inspiration to all of us. So Eric, happy birthday, my friend. Guys, I also want to note the episode we had with Kaj was just naturally very popular. And yes, you will see Kaj and myself hanging out in the Denver, Colorado location. We've got a bit of 10,000 work to be doing this week. But guys, I just want to say it's been really cool to have all of us as a community be fasting this week. It is the August fast. So as you may know, the first Monday to Friday of every month we fast. And that is a great way to help us reset, reboot, recharge, get the balance, and get maximum energy out of our days. So if you have not already, you can join the August fast by just beginning your own type of fast. Personally, we do a 16-hour fast, 8-hour eating window. And that's something we do Monday to Friday. And we now have people doing it every single day, which is pretty, pretty cool. So as I said, we're doing it right now, being the first full Monday to Friday of the month. And you're welcome to join. Just do it yourself. You can also, if you have any information, head to danchurchill.com and just click the link to the intermittent fasting planner. It's free and you get a little information on that as well. On top of that, team, we are seriously starting to get into some marathon or long distance running. So a lot of you have noticed the team and I get together and do that. So wherever you are running right now, your support's been awesome. Continue to, you know, shine some light and show us your runs. It's been really, really cool. We clicked over, we did 18 Ks on Saturday. So no doubt, I think coach has got us doing 20 this week. So anyway, a lot of you have been hitting me up, sending me your selfies, continue to send me your selfies on your runs. I love seeing the nature that is the location you're in, whether it be, you know, international, say, you know, UK, back at home in Australia, across the United States. Please continue to keep us involved. And you can obviously, people have been following me on Strava as well. So that's been really cool to see, you all repost your own times, your distances. And I think the biggest thing I've learned this year is how important low heart rate training is. So it's been really, really cool. Team, this week is all about, speaking of running, the man himself, Hella Sidibe. Now, you're about to learn a pretty incredible story. I think just to let you guys know, if you didn't know Hella, he's someone who's been running for 1,500 plus days straight. Like, think about, you know, running and making sure you've been doing every single day for 1,500 days. And I know, like, what constitutes a run for him, and you're about to find out what does. So after hearing that, you're like, well, that's pretty impressive. Not only that, though, he's just been the first black man to travel across the United States of America through running. So he's been from the West Coast all the way to the East Coast. He finished up a few months ago. He's a seriously inspiring character. I think he's just got the words of gratefulness and gratitude just oozing from him with every part of his happy personality. And I was speaking to a friend the other day. He's just someone who said he's always smiling. He always is. And so if you want to, you know, just be inspired by someone, get ready to crack into a pretty cool story. He comes from a pretty, you know, like as he puts it, like a unique upbringing. But it sounds like it's a lot different to anything I personally have experienced. So for him to, and him and his family, who, as you're about to learn, are very, very smart and accomplished, you know, move on from the country that he was growing up in and to make it over here is pretty, pretty cool. So I don't want to give anything further away because Hella's story is best told through Hella. But be sure to hit him up on Instagram. He's a great person. And no doubt you'll be seeing us on YouTube together very shortly. So Without saying any further, Hella, welcome to the studio kitchen and thank you for being a part of the Epic Table podcast.
My man, for the second time at Charlie Street, your first time down the studio kitchen, Hella Sidibe, welcome to the Epic Table
Thanks
podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Dude. Thank you.
Yeah.
How do we know each other? We initially met through Devin.
Yeah, through Devin.
And how you're, like, for those who don't know, Devin had a birthday party on the weekend.
Yeah.
Where paintballing was involved.
That was so fun.
So how's the body?
The body is fine. That was actually a fun, easy day.
Okay.
Overall, compared to everything else, yeah.
Paintballing is an easy day.
If anyone who hasn't paintball ever in their life, you should try it. It's so fun.
You had a good time?
Yeah, I had a great time. It hurts a little bit. The first impact, but after that, it goes away pretty quick.
What was your role? Like, what part of the team were you?
I was just like trying to move in as quick as possible. Yeah. And then my goal was don't get hit.
Yeah.
Cause
yeah.
I keep telling Devin, you're going to not regret being on my team. So I had to back that up. So I made sure I didn't get hit as much as possible. Cause Devin is a person, if you say something, you don't do it, he's going to keep calling you out.
Yeah. 100%.
So he's like, oh, hella, you're an assassin. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. That's 100%.
I took it serious.
Yeah. You had mental fortitude after what you've just competed.
Yeah.
Man, I remember watching this on the finish line and like I was just overwhelmed with emotions for you.
Thank you.
So for those who don't know, you just completed something pretty special.
Yeah.
What'd you finish?
Running across America from Los Angeles, California to New York City. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like what? Like three?
Over 3,000 miles. Almost 3,061 miles.
And how long did that take?
It took me 84 days.
84 days?
Yeah.
And you didn't stop, right?
Didn't stop. Started running since day one all the way till I got to New York City.
And so where is this? Because you've been running for 15. Have you still run for 1,500 days straight?
Yeah. So I've been running every day since May 15th of 2017. Actually, even prior to that, but on the record. So today is I completed my 1,529 consecutive days. Haven't missed a day.
1,529 days of running.
Uh-huh.
And just for context, I think I asked you earlier, what constitutes a run? Like me running to the grocery store or like?
No, it has to be a proper run. I dedicate the time actually getting out there to run.
Sure.
Even if I remember in the beginning I played pickup soccer. People were like, does that count? No, it has to be dedicated specifically to just running.
Got you.
Yeah.
Oh man, 1,500 days. That's over that's almost 5 years.
Over 4 years. I just hit the 4 year mark May 15th of 2021. So over 4 years, going on to five.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Like what that, did you have a goal in mind?
The beginning, the goal was just, it was actually a 2 weeks goal.
Okay.
It was just to get up and face my fear of running. I grew up playing soccer or football, depending on where you're from, you say it. And our coach would use running as a punishment for us. So every time you mess up on the pitch, on the line, and your stomach just dropped. And you don't, sometimes I couldn't even sleep the night before fitness test because I knew what to expect. So I detested running. I love playing in the game. I could play 90 minutes, no problem. But when it comes to strictly running, I couldn't handle it. So
That's crazy.
Was a goal to just face my fear. And it was a 2 weeks goal that turned into, after the first week, I went to my fiance. I said, I can do this for the rest of my life, but let me not get ahead of myself. Let's just focus on every day for a year. Didn't know anyone strict or anything at the time. And I went for year one, two, three. Now we're going for year five.
Dude, yeah. I was just going to say, we had Nick Bear literally just FaceTiming it just then. Should I call him in again or? You were just with him.
Yeah, Nick Bear destroyed me.
He just absolutely destroyed. I'm going to call him in, see if he answers. But yeah, effectively, like, you've done like a bit of a podcast tour now.
Yeah.
You on Rich Roll's podcast.
Yeah.
Dude, you're live. You're live on a podcast right now.
What's up, Nick?
Dude, you say you can't strain
your
arms.
I can't strain my arms. I haven't been able to. It's been bent.
He was just showing me, man. So you're live on the podcast right now, Nick. So he was just telling me beforehand how he's like, man, I haven't worked out in so long. And we went down there and like, obviously I've been running this whole time and MB just puts me through a workout. And now I can't, I'm like, honestly, I would love to impress Nick Bear myself, but I'm popping into a workout after doing that. And he's like, I can't, he's like, my back.
You want something funny?
What's that?
I think he ended the workout being nice to me because he went back again and do more of
that. Yeah, that's so classic of you. You probably went for another run and did something stupid.
We put him to like the most brutal dumbbell row.
Yeah. Ever. I'm so feeling it. But hey, I think I look more jacked. I feel pumped all the time.
He says you look big, man. You made him look big after one session.
I give him credit because this arm's been pumped. It's still pumped.
We build hybrid athletes.
Yes. I believe that after this one.
Oh, bro. Good. Well, I'm going to get back to the podcast. We'll give you a call a bit later, bro. Much love, dude.
Take care.
Man, that's honestly what it's like.
Yeah.
It's also cool that now people like Nick and Rich are recognizing.
Yeah.
Being like, I'm privileged to have you in this studio.
Thank you
for
having me, for sure.
I think what we've all recognized is there's more to this story than running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard your story through numerous podcasts, speaking to people, and even Rich said himself, he's like, I said to him, what's he like, you know? And he said, honestly, he's just the happiest person. Just can't stop smiling.
That's
and you're grateful for little things.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly.
So usually I kind of give a speech like that at the end of a pod, but that kind of had to be noted, man.
Yeah.
So with all that being said, you continue to run every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you initially were only doing it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But there's more to the story than that first initial 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Man. So where are you from? Where were you born?
Born and raised in West Africa, Mali. So actually I have my African necklace on. So for those who don't know.
That's it?
So yeah, this is the continent of Africa. So Mali is up this way. It's up north, but it's west. So West Africa, yeah. One of the poorest countries in the world. Countries in the world. People don't make a dollar in a day. That's how poor it is.
A dollar? So, what's the typical industry in Mali?
There's a lot of stuff. There's teaching. But it's more like personal entrepreneurship, like you having your own little business to survive, to be able to feed your family kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not like me as a 16-year-old in America, I can go get a minimum wage job at McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King to have some packaging. You don't have that.
You don't have that. No. And you're working for your family, like you're effectively all working together to survive.
Basically, yeah. Especially when you're in the village, you're doing farm work, cattle stuff, anything to survive.
Okay.
That's what it is, yeah.
And then so, like in doing the research and listening, you've got like, you've accomplished a lot.
Thank you.
But your family, man.
Yeah.
Like, there's some smart people here, right?
Yeah, my dad, my mom, and my sister, brother, everybody. I'm the athlete and the non. Yeah. I don't want the book.
Yeah, but.
The book's away from me.
Say that because you got a couple of PhDs in multiple countries, master's degrees.
Yes.
Man, that's a lot to live up
everybody
to.
Everybody graduating at 16 years old in high school, I was like normal, 18.
All of a sudden you look unique because you can't graduate at 16.
Yeah, 16,
okay.
I was a sophomore at 16. I was 10th grade.
Wow, but so your family, your mom and dad, they came over here to study, right?
Yes, on a Fulbright scholarship.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unreal. And where was that at?
Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Illinois, which is 1 hour west of Chicago.
Great.
Yeah.
And so did you move over with them?
So my dad came here in 95 by himself, and in 97 my mom had applied to come in for her master's. So she came to join. By the time my younger brother was 4, I was the second oldest, and my sister was then. I had an older brother who was old enough to be in Mali. So my little brother came, and my sister and I were sent to my mom's village to stay with her sister. And that didn't last long. Unfortunately, she passed away within half of the year, so there was nobody looking out for us. So they did everything for us to get like a visa, a J2 visa, dependent visa to come and join them. So I came here in 98 to 99 because they all finished their doctorate and master's degree at 99.
And you were how old at the time?
I was 7 years old.
And your family?
Yeah. And
like your sister or your brother?
My sister was two years older than me. Brother was almost 3 years younger than me. And so when that happened, when you're done with your degree, you got to go home.
Mm.
Your visa is no longer in status.
Sure.
Your visa is only valid if you're having full credit and studying. So I was here for a year. I learned English a little bit, and I moved back in 99. So I didn't come to the U.S. again until early 2000s and started high school.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were – okay, wow. So do you recall that much? Like,
I recall everything.
Okay.
Yeah, I recall even the smell of the airport when I JFK. And I still get – sometimes I get the smell, and I was like, oh, Belle. I called my fiance, Belle. I'm like, Belle, I smelled the first day I landed in the United States. You will never forget that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there's a smell that it was a good smell, so it wasn't a bad smell.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That always hit you. Like
It's amazing how the olfactory senses of you know, help us remind us those nostalgic times.
Uh-huh.
That's crazy. Yeah. Okay, so then you've gone back.
Yes.
Are you how is your English after only 1 year?
I thought my English was amazing. Nope. It was broken. It was so bad. It was good though, because there's some Americans who came to a school that I was going to, and they wanted to have a tour, and my English teacher, because you learn English, was supposed to kind of like guide them around. And he comes into a class and goes to the principal actually and said, they're too fast speaking. I don't know what they're saying. And then they had me guide the...
I think that the Americans were out.
My English was that much better than
your
professor.
Wow, that's cool, man.
But I realized how bad my English was when I came to the U.S. in high school. People were talking too fast. My accent was much thicker than this, and I was like, wow, I actually didn't know English. I thought I did.
So have you been back to Mali since?
Yeah, I've been back. Last time I visited was 2018.
And do they say your accent's a bit
They make fun of my accent when I'm speaking the native tongue, for sure. They're like, wait, they can hear, like, they have, like, an English, like, tone
twang
to it.
Yeah, cool. I always say this, when everyone talks about the English, like, your English after 1 year would have been better than mine as after 30-odd, you know? So
I'm still working at it.
Yeah, but your native tongue's French, right?
Yeah, French is the official language. So, gotcha. Bahman is the native language, and then French is the official language.
Dude, yeah. I would definitely learn French first. Yeah. Or Italian before English.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot tell you how people think about the French language. I'm sure you understand.
Yes. French is a cool language.
So is there like a traditional, is it Malinese? Is that the best way to say
Malian.
It? Malian.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the language?
Oh, so Bamana. Bamana is the language. So Bamana, is the people.
Okay.
Bamanankan is the language. So Bamana is like the people of Mali. Those are the original people. So Bamanankan, everybody speaks that.
So if you were to say, you know, I'm stoked to be here on the Eka table. Uh-huh. Would that be in Balama?
Yeah, I can say that. I can say ninja lendo. U ibisega for ne kontalendo many ni podcast la. Because if you say that podcast is not like a, there's no name.
No
for
name
that.
For it.
Yeah, so you would.
Wow, that's awesome.
Ne wasalendo
man. That's crazy, man. That's awesome, dude. So you speak three different languages.
Yes, three fluently and get it everything. And then my mom's side, my dad, I understand that very well and I can communicate. It's a different dialect. So five technically.
Okay.
Yeah. So you put me in their village, I'm good.
You're good to go.
I can communicate. Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. So then we'll talk about this in a second. You've also been to Australia.
Yeah.
And did you get any in touch with any Indigenous Australians in?
Yes, it was the best. I had actually a one that was a tour guide on the whale watching. Awesome. It was. I didn't know the history, how rich it was.
They don't
teach us that here. You gotta go out of your way.
Maybe that's what I'm here for. Yeah. Maybe wave the flag.
Yeah, you can show me everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we'll touch base on that, man. But I want to know how you got back here, because obviously your parents go home. Mm-hmm. I'll go back to Mali after studying here. They achieved their PhDs, right?
Yeah. So my mom came back to do a PhD in 2002.
Right.
And then 2001, actually, 2 years later, almost 3 years later, she got us here again.
Wow.
For schooling, there's people are always striking, the teacher are striking.
Okay.
You're not getting any education, so it's best for us to come and go to school. So we came back here again because she came back to go to school. So that's
then
you
got to stay, right?
We got to stay.
So what was the visa you were on then?
Yeah, we were on J2 still. So the thing about that visa is, as long as my mom was legal here and her visa is valid, we were good until you become an adult. Then you gotta go on your own visa. So when I went to college, I had to get my own J1 visa.
Gotcha.
And my sister and brother got F1s. And then it was the roughest thing ever because you're going in and out of the country.
Mm.
Your visa is about to expire. You got to get out before midnight hits because you're illegal technically immediately. So we would get out of the country. You could go to Canada, but we couldn't go to Canada. We don't have a Canadian passport. So the best way to do is go back home to Mali because we had a Malian passport. So we'd have to travel back to Africa to go to the U.S. embassy to apply for a new visa and come back to the U.S.
And how long would that process take?
So many. It took 20 years finally for me to be a U.S. citizen.
20 years?
Yeah.
How old are you now?
I'm 30 now. Yeah.
Man, this is what's interesting about this story, because I can actually to somewhat degree relate to that in the sense that I have to have a visa also to be here.
Uh-huh.
But we hear of this situation of getting, you know, being able to legally be here.
Yeah.
And your story, and a lot of people who are not from this country, that's a big part of it, is like, firstly, like, the moment you got that ability, it's like,
oh my.
Right?
Yeah, it's the best feeling. Because I've missed so many opportunities, actually, in the U.S. and parts of the world because of not having a U.S. citizenship.
Right. Like, that's what, professional?
Professional soccer. I had opportunity to play with professional teams in the MLS here, but visa would always come up.
Yeah, so you before you were even a runner,
you
were, and I say an ultra runner,
you
were actually competing, you got selected to Div 1 school,
I got a scholarship to go play at University of Massachusetts, Amherst, awesome. Division 1.
Okay, and when you were there, there was a separate league that was in Boston, was that right?
Yeah, it's called, it's a PDL, Premier Development League or Professional Development League, where they get you ready at the highest level without you losing your eligibility, so you're still an amateur. And it's called the Boston Victory. So there was like almost 500 people tried out.
Wow.
So I was selected as one of the 26.
Okay.
And then you compete with other PDL teams.
Yep.
And I got seen by Sporting Kansas City. They came to see actually a kid from Boston College that was like the ACC player of the year, scoring 26 goals a season. And my position was switched to be a left back to defend him.
Cause you're a midfielder.
Yeah, I was a midfielder. Okay. So the coach said, hey, Hella, you got speed. This kid is fast. We need be on him like glue. Don't let him go anywhere. So I just became a defender that whole game. And Sporting Kansas City was there to watch. And then my brother acted like an agent, was reaching out to MLS teams.
So
I'm Hella's agent. And they would be like, okay, and then kind of say, oh, we know Hella. We saw him play. In fact, we're interested to see if he was a left midfielder. We saw him play left back. And then I said immediately, I'm actually a left midfielder. I was just playing left back back then just because I had to shut this guy. And they came out for him. They didn't.
So they came out for him initially. They came out
for somebody else and saw me. And then they forgot about that player.
Okay. Yeah. So you're at this point. I want a little recap here. Cause what age are you here?
I was at, what was that? It was my junior year. So I was going to be a senior that following school year.
Okay. So yeah, you're almost
done.
Almost done. Yeah. And so this happens and you wanted to play in England, didn't you?
I wanted to play for Chelsea.
Okay.
If you asked me in high school, I'm going to be a professional soccer player. I'm going to play for Chelsea FC. And the reason that came about because U.S. national team took an interest in me when I was 16.
Gotcha.
I was even invited to Sarasota in Florida at a camp, but passport. And then they said, oh, hello, you don't have a U.S. passport. Tell your mom to get you one. So I thought it was that easy. I run home like, mom, I got to get my American passport. She looks at me, she goes, hell, that's not that easy. I was devastated.
So you're 16 at the time, and you had this opportunity presented itself, and it turns out that effectively, it was actually not anything out of your control that you could determine.
Yeah.
So here's my thing though. At 16, you could have just gone, well, like, this is real too tough.
Yeah.
So, but you still stuck to your guns.
Stuck to it. There's so many things that wasn't working. Wanted to be a pilot. Immigration again. I did ground school, had simulation time. I was ready for air school. Bring your passport. Shut down. Yeah. Wanted to be a police officer at the time. Wanted to do police academy. Shut down. And like 9/11 because of that. With the flying thing. So I kind of try to find the next thing and not give up. And I got to a point, especially after college, when you see professional teams want you, but the visa immigration is limiting you and it started getting to you. So that's what happened to me.
So is that the same thing with Kansas City?
Sporting Kansas City. Literally, Kansas City was the best. They wanted me so bad. Supplemented draft, they had me on a list to be selected. And also, I went to a combine where all the MLS team, professional teams are there. And my team over there, my coach went to Kansas City and said, we understand you want Hela. I know visa's an issue. Let me have him in Seattle for one season. I'll make him even a better midfielder with crosses and we'll send it to you. So by that year, you can figure out the whole visa situation. And that's how I signed my first professional contract in Seattle.
So how could you do that?
Because Seattle Sounders had a cap room for me as an international. So there's a cap. Eight players per team. The rest has to be domestic.
Gotcha.
And Sporting Kansas City coach told me, I won't tell you the coach's name, but he said, hey, Hela, the reality is we'd rather have a European player come back from Europe, whether they're old or not, they can sell jerseys and tickets. And we can find somebody, even if they're not as talented as you, they're a U.S. citizen, we can develop them. We don't have to worry about the whole immigration situation. Yeah.
And what were you like at the time when you heard that?
I was just, you're just like, I don't know what to do. I think at the time I was very depressed, but I wouldn't admit it. Okay. I would just say, people would be like, what's wrong? I'm like, I'm just frustrated.
See, this is interesting. Like, even now as you say this, you got a smile on your face.
Yeah, because I think back, some of those days when I was struggling, I always thought it was the worst, like it was the end of life. Mm. And then you see different areas of your life when you're sitting strong, you look back, you're like, I survived when you thought that was the end of everything. So now when I look back at anything or anything I go through today, it's the same thing. I'm like, you know what? You survived back then. You'll be fine. So it's not the end. Something else will come up. And you just have to keep pushing forward.
Yeah, but it's not easy to do, is it? Like,
no.
I mean, I just think remember like being told how I have to get here, right? How to get to America. And I'm like, oh yeah, like naively, like, oh yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
But it's a lot harder than it is. So did you go play for Seattle for a year?
Yeah, I was in Seattle. So I was with a team called Kitsap Puma. So it was the same owners as Seattle. Robin was part of the ownership. So we're basically their affiliate, their farm team too.
Yep.
So we had professional contract. We play against professional teams. I actually played my first game against Vancouver Whitecaps in Canada.
Wow.
And I got my assist. I'm like, why do we have to lose that game? I get an assist and then we lose the game. So the assist doesn't mean anything to me.
But hang on, how did you could you get to Canada no problem?
Yeah, because the visa I had, and I think about it, I'm like, there's no way that would work out this time. So I had a U.S. visa that was extended. So after you're done with school, they gave me an academic extension where your visa gets extended, right? So I used that as my major. I was a camp counselor for the team I was signed to. So I did coach little kids. That was the only way they can sign me.
Gotcha.
And it wasn't illegal. It was legal. It was just working the system.
Sure.
So Hela's working for us as a camp counselor. He's academic extension, extending his major as a sociologist. I'm working with kids. That's what I'm supposed to work with people. And then I play with him. So that's the kind of contract I was on. So I got into Canada. No problem. They actually just looked at my driver's license back then. We're talking about 2013.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. Coming to the U.S., the team is waiting for me at the border. I was there for hours for them to officially let me. I was nervous. I'm like, I have a valid visa, but they can deny everything and detain me immediately.
100%.
With ICE, yeah. So that after that, I'm like, I'm not gonna wait, leave until everything.
Yeah.
At least I have permanent residency. But after the season in Seattle, I had one of my high school coaches, roommate was an agent, Coach Finks, coach. He played at the University of Tampa. They had me a contract to go to Germany to play for Bundesliga 2, which there was the U.S. national team players on that. And I flew to Boston, went to immigration at the embassy consulate with my appointment, and then they denied the visa. It was me and this other player. So they said, hello, the reason we deny your visa is because you might be an immigration issue in Germany. You're not a U.S. citizen. If that season is over, I was guaranteed a season, not guaranteed any playing time or anything. If that season is over, what happened if you don't go back to home to Africa? Now we're stuck with you. So that was the denial of my visa. And the American player, who's a goalkeeper that I went with, that he got to go. He lived his dream living, playing in Europe. He literally had phone ready for us, cars, apartment. I was so excited. And then I was denied that too. So yeah, there were some opportunities that came up, but it all came back down to immigration. But looking back, it was all worth it waiting because now I'm living my dream, honestly.
Dude, yeah. This is crazy.
Yeah.
At the time, there's so many people growing up, young males and young women who want to play sport professionally.
Yeah.
And usually it's your skills.
Yeah, skills.
That stop you from
getting
to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You had the skills.
Yes.
You had the interest.
Yeah.
Something outside of your control.
That's the frustrating part.
That is so frustrating. Man, you must know the immigration system so well.
Yeah. I went through a lot.
Oh, yeah. Dude. So at that point in time, you're about to potentially head to Germany and you're denied. Where's your head at?
I was just like mad at the world and I had so many excuses, and then some of those excuses are valid because they're out of your control.
Mm.
But I was just, people were like, hella, you're not yourself. I'm like, no, what are you talking about? I'm just frustrated. I think I was definitely depressed looking back.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so what happened after that? Did you continue on your football opportunity? Or did
I tried to get on teams. Yeah. I wouldn't even tell them my immigration situation. I would just go on. Mm-hmm. And because you tell them right away, that's a red flag. They probably won't even look at you.
Of course.
And I've tried with teams, Harrisburg City Islanders, I've tried. And then the best part that happened to me, my coach at Washington in Seattle was an assistant coach in Oklahoma City. So he said, hell, we're doing a try. And I knew when he was selected coach, I was like, oh, that would be so cool to have a reunion again, me playing for him. Come try. 200 kids showed up. So I was one of two selected to go in preseason with the first team. And they decided to keep me there for their second team. And I played in Oklahoma. So that was good coming back. And I just got my green card, which was amazing. Yeah, so I wasn't like an international player. So this is in 2016. So I got to play a season there. And basically after that, I came in trying to get on the Red Bulls. That didn't work out. And then I played a month in Florida with a similar PDL kind of thing, but you get paid because you're not a college player anymore. And then after that, I just decided it was enough.
It was enough?
Yeah.
So, dude, you've gone from like, I think the question I have for you is, how do you let go of your like dream to chase something else?
You gotta just keep going. And the reason I tell people, you can do anything with the right mindset. It's never too late. And people ask me, hella, why aren't you chasing soccer anymore? I tell them, I'm actually done with it. I'm not giving the effort that I need to do. So if you really want, you gotta give it full effort. And for me, it was more of like, okay, I love the game, but the passion is not the same and the hustle to it is not the same. So that's why I'm not chasing it. I'm satisfied I got to go to school for free. I have zero student loan today. And I also got to meet incredible friends and that are still part of my life. I got to meet the woman I'm with today. So I looked at the bigger picture and I got to travel throughout all these amazing states and it was a win. So I was ready to leave it. I didn't do anything else and I retired or anything, but it was just, now that chapter is over. Still part of my life till today because I train little kids and I enjoy doing that, but I move on to the next thing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's like you start to think about the things you learned and were taught through this professional environment,
mm-hmm.
and you start to think about how they apply to your day to day.
Yeah.
Like you can think, okay, well, I may not think it, and it was it the fact that there were certain aspects to that professional life that I really enjoyed? For example, the fact you get to travel, be a mm-hmm. part of a team, stuff that you get to do still
it's
today.
It's so fun. Yeah.
Right?
I still get to do that.
Yeah.
I'll always remember this. Bell said to me, sometime you chase things in life you want so bad, you hold on to too tight, but it's preparing you for something better. And I think soccer did prepare me for what I'm doing today.
That's awesome.
The discipline and even my coach. And I understand what my coach means and saying one day you're going to want someone to get out there and push you as much as we are. Take advantage of it right now. And I understand all that. So it all became, it was preparing me for this. And you know, there's things that you want in life, you got to go for it. Don't let anyone tell you can't do it. But when it's not working out, it's preparing you for something better. So it doesn't mean to just quit. It just means find another route to get to what you want to do. So for me, running, something that I hated, was part of the game of soccer. But I came around in a different route to enjoy that now. But it all because of soccer. Because soccer had to make me hate it for me to try to want to love it again.
So 2016 was your last year playing? So was it
like competitively fully. And then 2018 doesn't even count. I went for like a month in Florida. Yeah.
So 2016, and obviously playing, particularly midfield, you're covering some Ks and miles per game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were wearing GPS, right?
Oh, yeah. We didn't wear GPS at the time, but I was sprinting back and forth. I'll show you some highlights, but my job was to just run the flank, and humbly, no one could catch me on the wing.
Sure.
So you put the ball in space. It was me and another player on the other side, Chris Rossois. No one could get us.
No one can get you.
No, it's a foot race. So, like, so it wasn't even more skill. Kick the ball and
kick
get
the
to
ball,
it.
That's it. That's all right, man. That's great. Truth.
Yeah, that was our strength.
But you could just, by nature, you could run.
Yeah, I could run. I can run. And the thing about soccer is, you're attacking, you're defending. Counterattacks were so fun. 50-50 balls. You're tackling, you can be aggressive. So there's so much aspects of the game that keeps you focused somewhere else. It's not just the pain of running, because you get over that. But when it's just strictly running, there's nothing else that's keeping you entertained but running. So that was my issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then taking this from your consideration and knowing that, like, I used to, when I was a strength conditioning coach, we used to track AFL players, which is a code in Australia. Mm-hmm. Along with that, you had football players and soccer players.
Yeah.
You guys, like, not only do you travel a long distance, actually the pace you're traveling at is very very fast.
It's fast.
So you got like a lot of intensity moving there, mm-hmm. obviously just to cover, particularly in midfield.
Yeah.
So you take that, and you said you hate running.
Mm-hmm.
So if we would put a ball in front of you, and go for a run down the street, is that a different mindset?
At that, back then,
yeah.
I would have been like, I don't even know which one to pick. I'm telling you, because I think it's the way our coach did it. He wanted us to be afraid of it. There's you show up at the field, you do something wrong outside of anyone messes up in the classroom or get arrested. You get to the field, you have your cleats on, we always have to bring our running shoes. You set up the goals, you get the balls out. He gets to the field, he says, put your cleats away, put on your running shoes, put the goals away. 2 hours straight, you don't see a ball or anything. You're running the football stadium. You're talking about American football. You know how big those stadiums are at college level? We're running that for the whole sessions. And he would even say, I don't care how unskilled you guys are, you're going to be the fittest team in America. To a point that our university track team will call us the UMass track team. Not them anymore. Because that's not, we would go play a North Carolina team that's like top in the country a day before because he doesn't like the way we're playing possession. We're sprinting hills.
You're kidding.
Imagine that. Yeah. And you go get your ass. Because my leg was
3-0.
Yeah, because your legs were shot. So running became, if you ask any of my teammates, it was a punishment. So I only saw it as punishment, especially me personally. It got me mentally. It really did. I think that's why.
Okay, so then what was the connection to run? Like, how did you said 2 weeks, you just thought you were going to run for 2 weeks. But day one, like, what led you? I'm just going to run every day for 2 weeks.
There's a point, I guess, I hope it happens to everybody in life because I needed it. There's a point in life where you're like, I'm just sick of making excuses. I'm sick of not holding myself accountable. And you want to make a promise to yourself and prove it to yourself that you can keep this promise. So I didn't go and sit in front of a mirror. You got one of these like, I'm looking at myself kind of moment. And I said, what is it that I can control? I'm tired of making excuses. Some of the stuff that happened in my life were valid excuses. But why do I have to make excuses about it? Why don't I focus my energy on what I can control?
Mm.
And what I can control was my ability of getting up and taking action. And the first thing that hit me, what am I afraid of that I want to try? Running hit me immediately. It was a no-brainer. Running was the first thing that hit me. This is the thing you're afraid of. Why don't you try to tackle it? Just give yourself 2 weeks. And I knew immediately at that point that I was going to succeed because I had zero pressure. I said, I'm not racing anybody. It's me versus me. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. I'm going to take my time. 10 minutes a day was the goal in the beginning. And I just want to be out there. And spring was in the air. So I just fell in love with it because zero pressure. And I was doing something attainable at the time. 10 minutes is nothing. I could have done more. But I knew it was healthy for me to tell myself 10 minutes because it's attainable. And I ended up doing longer than 10 minutes in the first week. It was just something just to give yourself a peace of mind. So that's how everything started.
Okay. Yeah. So you've taken your first step. You're heating up your roads,
uh-huh.
Spring is in the air.
Yeah, you're excited to be outside.
And so is day one and two like a struggle?
No.
Okay.
Pressure free. I think because the fact that I was like, I have nothing to lose. and I couldn't wait to get out. And I was working 9 to 5. I would either get up early in the morning to run or do it in the evening. It was just the best feeling ever. I was like, I'm free. I was like, actually, running is not that bad. I made it worse for myself. So I was getting those feelings immediately.
This is amazing to me. Okay, so you're getting all this endorphins, this beautiful, you know, positive, happy hormones.
Yeah.
And what were you, you know, what were you doing for 9 to 5 at the time?
I was at a data entry at a limousine company called Airbrook in New Jersey. I just sit there and people make reservation. I'm punching all their information in. This is what I'm doing every day. Yeah, I absolutely hated it too.
Can imagine, like, you rocking up after a run, like, you rocking up, sitting down, couldn't be further from, like, what you've been dreaming of.
I would tell my co-workers, I started running, they would look at me like, okay. Like, it was a big deal to me, they were like, okay, good for you. They didn't understand at the time what I had to, what I was going through, and it was like the best thing I discovered.
It was like, hey, but this is actually a big deal. They're like, yeah, cool man, just go to the Excel, A7.
Start putting stuff in a spreadsheet.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So okay, then from here, you've established, okay, I kind of like running, so you've gone from 2 weeks to what? It's like, oh, I'll run a bit over 3 weeks.
No, just within the first week actually of the 2 weeks goal, I literally said, Belle, I can see myself doing this for the rest of my life.
Wow.
But I didn't want to get ahead of myself.
Sure.
Again, pressure. So let me just do this for 1 year. And I knew that wasn't any pressure to me. Getting out there every single day, no matter the circumstances. It has to be outside. Treadmill didn't count for me.
Okay.
It was snowing, raining, sunshine. I wanted to test myself in that aspect.
Uh-huh.
Because I knew I wasn't afraid of running now. But can I challenge myself mentally with these weather and these time of the day? So that's, I said 1 year immediately.
And so you did 1 year?
Yeah. And within the 1 year, I knew I wasn't going to stop.
Okay.
I started, and she convinced me actually to put it on social media. So I did everything I can to just keep it to myself, her few family members, and she was like, we gotta do a YouTube video on this. This is amazing. I keep saying no. So eventually day 163, I said yes. I did my run in the morning. I said, can I go get my haircut? Cause I wanted it to look nice and sharp. I went to get my haircut. I came back and we did a video and the video title was Why I Run Every Day. So that's the video that went viral and we became YouTubers because of it. So thanks to her, I'm actually sitting here with you.
Oh man.
Yeah, because of her, how good it was born.
Irrespective of that, like just being around good people, man. But that's Hella Good's a great brand, by the way.
Yeah, that's how it was born.
Was that her or was that you, man?
So name is Hella. It's my actual name.
Obviously.
People don't believe it sometimes. I have to show my ID. But the Hella Good came from college playing soccer.
Because you're Hella Good at it?
People thought I was good. So
everyone thinks you're good.
They'd make signs, Hella Good. And my friend was like, you should make that your Instagram name, my best friend. And I was like, yeah, I'm thinking about it. And then it was just always my Instagram name. And then we made it a YouTube as well.
Subtle plug. This is actually where you guys jump onto Instagram, go Hella Good, and the same for YouTube.
Yeah.
And you can subscribe and obviously follow Hella. He's got some pretty amazing content.
Thank you.
Massive shout out to his fiance.
Yeah.
Because without her, he would not have the content
today. No chance.
How are you with editing and whatnot, man?
I'm awful. I don't know how to edit anything. I tell people, my job is easy. I just run.
It's the easiest thing.
She does everything. She even makes sure that even today, the meeting with you, the address in the calendar, I just click on it. It takes me to the map. I don't have to go look through the email to punch in the address.
Man.
Yeah.
That's an amazing relationship.
Yeah.
See, like my wonderful partner, Melina, I keep business and our lives separate. But
yeah.
So I have a Maddie. Your Maddie's amazing. She does all that for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are not anywhere near where we need to be without the special Bellas in our life. So where did you meet Bella? What stage?
At school.
Okay.
In UMass. Yeah.
Amazing.
So it happened that my friend invited her roommate over to come pregame.
Cool.
And she showed up and I was like, whoa, who's this person? So I went into my room. I was like, hey, Gary, come over here real quick. Who's this person? And then she didn't have a chair to sit on and I never let anyone sit on my office chair. It was like my pride and joy. This fancy office chair that my guardian bought me for college. So I brought it out for her to sit. That's a big deal to me. Yeah,
exactly. You brought the office chair out.
No one could sit on that thing. Even sometimes I don't even want to sit on it because I didn't want to mess it up.
Wow.
That's how fancy that thing was.
And so did you like wipe it down afterwards? Or
no, I was just like, I like her. She's going to get to sit on it. So I gave it to her. We started talking and I was a designated driver. I didn't drink because soccer, I had practice in the morning.
Sure.
She didn't drink. So we were the only two sober ones.
Okay.
Left to have conversation.
So you had a legit conversation.
Yeah.
You didn't make a fool of yourself.
No. And then I begged my friend to invite her friend over the following weekend again and she showed up wearing red jeans and I happened to be wearing red skinny jeans. I'm like, oh, that's a perfect icebreaker. Like, who was red jeans?
He wears two red jeans.
Yeah.
And then so that's how you found your videographer. That's great.
That's how I started.
Yeah.
So you want to find a videographer wear red jeans.
That's so amazing. So dude, you're like, you're running every day.
Yeah.
And you're doing this for a number of years, and obviously you're doing the whole YouTube thing, and it's growing and it's exciting. Yeah. So where did you come up with the idea of running from the West Coast America to the East Coast?
So within the first year, I really realized really quick that running was bigger than myself. It's a privilege. Sure. I'm like, wow, this is actually a privilege. So there's people out there who can't walk, let alone run. People are amputated, accident, whatever, life happens, and I have my ability. So in my mind, I'm running for them. Always been like that. Mm-hmm. So if you have a bigger purpose, it doesn't matter how late it is. You'll get out there and get it done. And then within the second year, it was more of, let me prove it to myself I can do it twice. Now I know what to expect. Nothing is new to me now. I know what season is coming. I knew that winter was rough to see if I can mentally handle it. And I was injured. And I was able to, within that 2 years that I was finishing, I was like, I need a bigger challenge. Because running is a daily routine. What can I do? Hit me. Run across LA. From New York, actually, to LA. I wanted to go from New York to LA because I knew LA had good vegan food. So I wanted to go in there and just kill myself with vegan food.
Sure.
But I realized it was better to come from West Coast, East Coast tailwind, which I didn't get any. But also there's family here at the finish line. So the idea came up, but I wanted to do it for a nonprofit. Again, Bell, she Church, the nonprofit we found, Souls for Souls, which is a nonprofit that collects unwanted shoes, use their new, and turn it into opportunity, trying to break the cycle of poverty.
Yeah, it's huge, man. And it's kind of like, you know, reading your story and hearing about it, it's pretty, you know, special to you.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense. You brought a lot of awareness to that too.
Yeah.
Really incredible.
Thank you.
Mate, I do want to know is like, before we actually get to that, we have to remind people that you have traveled internationally.
Yeah.
And still kept up your running.
Yes. And I would say my favorite country that I went to, motherland, home is always home because there's no place like home.
Of course.
I would say Australia. I mean, I've been to other places. Like, I can't really say I've been to Europe and stay there long. Sure. I haven't. Like, connections, transit doesn't count. But Australia, it's so beautiful. Mm. It is so big. The people are so nice. And I got to stay in Broome, which is incredible.
Man, this is what's... Yeah. When you told me this story... Yeah. So, like, everyone listening in, I tell people, everyone's like, where do I go to Australia? Uh-huh. I'm like, look... If you've only got like a couple of weeks, do the East Coast.
Yeah.
Because you can see more in
there's
that
so
place
much.
Of time.
Mm-hmm.
But Broome and Exmouth is just one of those beautiful places. It's the northwest part of Australia.
Literally the red dirt and the contrast with the blue water, the people. And you see, it's just beautiful. I was running on the beach every day. I was running in town and it's just, there's so much to do. Cliff jumping. It's just incredible being there, and I would go back there again. When I go to Australia, I would go back to Broome again. I don't even want to like experience anywhere else because I loved it that much. And we were so busy doing things, like fun things, that 4 day felt like we were there for a week because you were just always busy, which is I like being busy. Yeah.
Yeah. So like for me, as I said, you summed it up perfectly. The blue water up against this beautiful red.
It's incredible.
But let's talk about your strategy here, because this is still in the middle of your run every day thing,
yeah.
right? And it's 26 hours to Australia. So you were, it was with GoPro, right?
It was with GoPro.
So you had to tell them, it's like, what was the one rule?
I said to GoPro, I was so hurt, because I'm like, people were telling me way before I had an Australian audience, you should come to Australia. I was like, yeah. But I'm like, in the back of my, no way it's happening, because I'm going to miss a day. Mm. So I told GoPro, I might not be able to go because I'm going to miss my streak. And I said, because of running, actually, I met you guys. It's very important. And I'm not about to break that because it brought so many opportunities. Not just that, like running even got me to meet you guys. And they're like, well, we're going to connect you with a travel agent. Let's see how we can make this happen. I was on a phone call, email, and we had a logistics, how to get me to Australia without missing a day. I did a full YouTube video explaining to my audience. And I showed them every proof, everything, because I want them to know I did not miss a day. I was not going to miss a day.
You flew from JFK to LA.
Yeah, so I flew from JFK. So we're doing everything off of the East Coast time zone, and it only makes sense. I've traveled to California even recently, and I don't get the extra 3 hours. I make sure my time zone stay here, because if you let it auto-change, you're getting 3 extra hours. Mm. So that means I get 27 hours in a day. No, I get the same 24 as I do. I make sure it's the same day, so there's no advantage at all. Because I could have used that advantage and not missed a day, but I didn't want to do that.
So what happens if you come back then?
Coming back, you're basically getting the time back that you kind of almost would lose going to Australia because they're a whole day ahead.
Yep.
But it was just still 24 hours.
Gotcha.
It was still East Coast time zone. So I went from New York, JFK, I guess LA, spent a full day in LA. I ran before actually I got to LA, and I ran again when I landed in LA just to run extra. I had the day too. So it was a Friday actually. Thursday I got there, did Friday, and then a Friday at midnight, Saturday at East Coast. So at 9 p.m. in LA, that was midnight in New York City.
Yeah.
And that was the East Coast time zone. So I got up at midnight time zone. So it was Saturday, and I got up. I ran 2 miles before I went to the airport to hop on a 15-hour flight to get to Brisbane. And then I ended up running literally from, because Bradley, LAX, I ran another almost 2 miles to get to my gate because there's traffic. I was rolling my thing, running. I got to the gate sweaty. They told me, you better wipe your sweat and not look like you're crazy because they might not let you on this flight thinking there's something wrong with you. So I ended up running 4 miles that night. And then when I got to Brisbane, I was able to get off the flight and get a run. And I was still good on the time zone. I waited to get to Broome and ran again. And it was a Sunday at that point because they're a whole day ahead. And it was Saturday in the United States. But later on, it was already Sunday in the U.S. It was just like early, like 3 in the morning when it was 3 p.m. in Broome. So I was able to keep my streak going that
way. Dude, this is so interesting because you're so committed to it.
Yeah, I have all the numbers and then showing everything, screenshot, so people can see exactly the time and everything. And okay. I can still fall in within not missing a day. And the good thing is that when you miss a streak, the Apple Watch will tell you. Because I have the streak getting recorded. It actually tells you my streak. So if I pull up my phone in the app, you'll see the streak today. You'll see.
Wow.
So it would even like start from zero. So you wouldn't see the 1529.
And what's the title of that YouTube video?
How I Kept My Streak Alive.
How I Kept My Streak Alive. So everyone check that one out too after subscribing. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. Okay, so you've traveled to Australia. We're going to get you back there. We'll do an epic little travel
there. I have to bring Belle because I thought you missed out. You missed out on that one.
It's okay. We didn't do too much. Yeah. You know, we only saw
we just had some
whales.
Champagne.
Yeah, it was nice.
And some mud bath.
Went on a helicopter ride.
Helicopter to have lunch.
Amazing. Yeah. Jeez, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And so like when that happened and you've gone, okay, I've come back and you realize I would have thought at the time, I know I can do anything now. Mm-hmm. Like I know that I can pretty much travel.
You can make it happen.
You can make it happen, right? So just to get some specifics out of the way, when you're running, you're running minimum 5Ks.
Yeah.
Some days are you doing like half marathons?
I've had some crazy distance days. I've had half marathons. I've had a lot of double days.
Okay.
I've had over 400 miles in a month, 420 miles is my toughest monthly mileage. I've run 245 mile a week, running 35 miles a day. And I've done ultra marathon, like 50 mile days. And I beat my PR by 30 minutes the last 2 years back to back. So hoping this year I'm going to see if I can beat my PR again because I learned so much through the Transcontinental. So I've experienced a little bit of everything.
So, okay. So then I don't think I'm just forgive if I'm wrong. The days leading up to your Transcontinental, I'm assuming your eating's pretty rhythmic because you're like, all I have to do to my goal is to do a minimum 5Ks. Now it can be longer than that, but it's got to be 5. So in terms of your food, you've been plant-based. How long have you been plant-based for?
Over 5 years.
Okay, cool. So you've been plant-based. It's obviously a fantastic way to reduce inflammation and help with recovery. We love all that.
Yeah.
But what about like, this is what I'm interested in. Some of the things I see would be a massive challenge is when you're traveling through Middle America.
Yeah.
Access to like
food,
good food.
Yeah, we had everything planned. Thank you to Gymshark, my sponsors. We had an RV with a nice fridge.
Okay.
So we would stack everything up.
Okay.
Frozen food, produce didn't last as long, but we'd just get everything.
That's amazing.
And again, I didn't do anything. Belle would have my meal ready every day.
Wait, so she's your videographer, so editor,
she literally,
and
this is what she was doing. Driving 6 miles an hour next to me across the road for safety and hydration. And then every rest stop, she's whipping up a meal within that rest stop or have it ready prior to. Most of the time, she's doing it while I'm resting. And then she would get content and direction. She's my eyes. She would tell me, turn when you see this. I'll get there. I'm like, hey, Siri, call Belle. What street did you say to turn out? I'm not good with direction. So she wouldn't even be able to leave me for a while because she knows she needs to guide me. So she did it all. She was literally the one holding this trip together. She was in there, I would have been in big trouble.
Mate, this woman, amazing. Yeah. I'm glad we're about to tell the story about something special for those who don't know. But yeah, so you're on this, okay. So you're on this thing, you got food sorted, hydration down to a T, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Tell me about some of the, like, not only are you running consistently across all these days, it's consecutive. What do you find yourself, like, you pretty much get to the point where, okay, I can't stop one, but also I've got to cover a certain distance now.
Yeah.
So you increased your load.
Yeah.
So you can't just do, I'm just going to do 5Ks every five.
No, that's like a waste of a day.
Right. So what are you trying to hit on average every day?
I knew I was capable of doing at least 35 miles a day.
35 miles a day?
Yeah, I knew I was capable of that. So I told my sponsors, Gymshark and Viva Life 100 days or less. I told YouTube platform Instagram 100 days or less.
Yeah, isn't but it funny?
In my mind, I wanted 85 or less.
Okay.
So that's just to give me breathing room. So that's just, well, not just, but that's just 32 miles a day.
Okay.
I know I could do that. I could do at least 35 miles a day. So I, going out there, even a 20 mile day was a fail. It wasn't a success day because 20 miles out of a whole day is nothing. You just move 20 miles forward. So you look at the bigger picture sometime. So I would just get out there and then just give whatever I have. And the first half of the Transcontinental took me almost 50 days. And the second half took me only 34 days. And I was doing like mini 47 mile a day, had a 50 mile a day, mini 44 mile a day, no less than 40s. So we started even ramping up the mileage toward the end because I wanted to just get home. Son of you, done with it.
You were really done with it?
Yeah, well, it was one of those things. Do you want to spend an extra 16 days to get to 100 and suffer? Or you want to suffer and get home quicker? So I chose to suffer and get home quicker.
Okay. Yeah. So what did you keep your heart rate up?
Oh, I was really good with that. So I'd make sure it was below 140. I had people join me. Many amazing people came to join the run. They would track me down. But sometimes people just get carried away. Group of people come, next thing you know, they're pulling, and I'm like behind. I look at my heart, I'm like, nope, I'm not getting pulling for that because I got to survive today, the next, and the next, and the next. They're only here for a day, so I can't pull it because if I pull it, I'm going to pay for it tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I keep my heart rate at a certain rate, and I knew based on that my pace was a certain pace. I didn't even pay attention to the pace. I'll look at the heart rate.
The heart rate.
To keep that zone two. Just use the least amount of oxygen, be efficient, and keep going.
Did you ever find yourself, like, did you get that from coach or you just something you knew?
I spoke to Robbie Ballinger who did the Transcontinental.
Awesome.
And the reason I found Robbie Ballinger, because I didn't think anyone's ever done the Transcontinental. And Bill started Googling and found Robbie Ballinger going literally behind our house and his route was by there. So we went to find him and I did his last 17 miles with him. So he was telling me about the zone, what to focus on. But one day I was so sick of ultra shouting, just going slow. I was just like in pain, my knee hurt. I said, forget everything. I'm just going to push through it. I just started flying, going at like 7-something minute mile pace. I didn't care because I was just tired of, I missed like my heart, like my lungs on fire and my hamstring and like fired up, my glutes activated. So I was just like, it was in New Mexico, I believe. I was just like, screw this. And Belle is on the side of the road. She's looking at me. What is he doing? I just started flying. So you'll see that one in the video. And it was the best feeling because I did that. I think that was a good turning point. And the next day I felt really like beat up, but like it brought this level of energy back in. And it was a good turning point because now I just started pushing it even more. Cause I'm like, just eat up the pain. Cause that's it's not going to go away. You got to not do this. This is every day. And then you have a long days, a lot of days to go.
You know, it's funny you say that. And this is from subjectively for me. It's like when I'm running at a zone, like low heart rate, mm-hmm. I love it. But after a while, like I find if I'm doing that, I'm also my cadence and my hamstrings.
Everything changes.
It's like it gets really tight within a certain, mm-hmm. you know, gait. And then if I start running a little harder, it opens up a little bit, stretches it out a little bit, and then I can come back to it.
Yeah.
So I've got no evidence through, you know, clinical studies to support that. Just purely subjectively.
Yeah.
If you're running at a certain gait and you open up a little bit, it kind of stretches you out.
And I started making a day, like every day, hella, you gotta open it up.
Okay.
At least for mine. That started being a thing.
Okay. So
I would look forward to that time. I think I'm ready now. It would be like around, I would start at 36 miles and I don't stop till 47. So I would do my last break at 36, mm-hmm. go straight to 47, and I would just open it up in one of those miles, the best feeling.
So what would a day look like, man? What time would you get up?
A day, get up at 6:30, start wrapping the blister, wrapping the shin splints. And eat something, get in a car, get to the start where we dropped the pin the night where I finished, whatever sign we had. I would always put like an arrow and put NYC and then put HG, like that's the direction we're going. And go back to that area, we have to start by 7:30 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so did you ever get to a point where you're like, oh, I can't find the pin?
Oh, no. Or we made sure. So we make sure it's not just dropping a pin. We want to see like the street signs, the street number, the mileage.
Yep.
If I don't see one and I'm at 47 miles, I keep going for extra miles till I get there. Okay. Because the worst thing you want to do is come back the next day like, where did I stop?
Yeah.
And people are funny. People know. Like, let's say if I stop here, when I go back the next day, I don't even start exact. I take 2 steps back. I give like 5 yards back to get the garment to kick in. So when it's kicking in and by the time I get there, it's all kicked in. So there's no cheating. I'm not gaining even 2 steps forward. I got to make sure where I stop, that's where I start. So we made sure on many days it was like raining and miserable, cold at night. And like, I don't see any street signs. I don't see any numbers. And Belle was like, you got to keep going. She would be in my headphone and the phone. You got to keep going until we find the next one. So we'll drop the pin So if anything happened with the pin, we know there's three signs. There's other ways that we know we can get to the.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, it was, all right. What a woman she is.
Yeah.
Mate, talk me through, the darkest day that you had.
Oh, I will never forget this mountain. I gotta look for the name. See, that's why I like just blacked it out.
Yeah.
It was our first full day in Arizona. It was a switchback, literally going up for 11 some miles. I gained 3,000 feet in elevation in 6 miles.
Oh, wow. In yeah. 6 miles. Mm-hmm. So it's quick.
Have you ever heard? Yeah. I've never heard of that.
That's crazy.
And it was so dangerous. So it was, you either fall off the cliff or you get hit by a car. Which one are you going to choose? And I didn't even know Belle was crying the whole time. She was in the car bawling her eyes out. She told me after.
Well, she was so
scared. She was scared for me and herself. And cars are flying in and out in at these switchbacks. And it's steep. You look on the cliff, you see cars are falling off of this.
There's cars down the
bottom. Cars that are falling off. And you're just like panicking. And I went through all kinds of weather. I went through snow, hail, rain, wind, sun, freezing, and wet. It was just, it was an insane time. It got to a point she was so nervous for me. I was going to get hit or fall off. She said, go in front of my car. I'm going to go as slow as I can. And people just have to be patient behind me. If they're impatient, they got to get around. But they can't really get around because it's a tight road. They really got to wait. So people are honking. Someone almost re-ended her, and I saw it happening because they were coming flying in a corner and just slammed the brake. And they even like looked at her as they go, but they're like, we're sorry, these two girls. But that was the worst. And my knee, me being me, I had the ego. You're not walking any hills. You're running everything up. You came here to run. So I blew my knee up. Basically swelling sack of liquid behind the knee. IT band was gone. So that was a rough day. And when I got down that mountain, there's like miles of like going down and you don't want to take it too fast because your shin splint.
Mm.
And I couldn't even enjoy that because I was in so much pain.
Because going down the mountain almost would be tougher, right?
Yeah.
Because you're putting so much extra weight on your joints.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the toughest days. And there's been two other tough days. There's a day in Missouri that I did not... Missouri was my least favorite state. First, it had to do with snakes. I've never seen so many snakes in my life. When people ask me, have you seen a snake during the transcontinental? I was like, no, what are you talking about? We get to Missouri, Snakes, big ones. I saw a baby one in the beginning. I was like, oh, this is cute. Even push it off the road so it doesn't get run over. And now we start seeing big ones. Like, this is probably the size they get to. And I've got one jumped in front of me and freaked out, panicked. And I didn't think Belle believed me. I was like, let's walk back. We went back. It was there still. And it jumped into the water area. You'll see roadkill fresh ones, big ones, their head. It was just scary to me. And I got some racial slur yelled at me in Missouri by a bunch of boys in high school.
That,
yeah. And I got flicked off by a driver that's on the opposite side of the road. I'm not even in your lane. I'm like, wait, did that just flick off a driver or is this flicking me off? I'm like, there's nobody behind. Belle is not anywhere near. Sometimes she goes ahead and do a U-turn. Like, what's happening? And I'm like, all right, well, you have a good day, sir. So, Missouri wasn't fun. But I do think they made up. When I put that on my social media, I was called the N-word by a bunch of kids, literally driving out of the high school parking lot. And they did it, stuck their head out the window, the back of the truck, rolled it down, and then ducked down, and the driver stepped on it. And I put it on Instagram just explaining it, like, why. I was so shocked, like, wait, what did I even do? I'm just trying to run across the country.
Yeah.
So next thing you know, the school is trying to reach out. The principal wants to talk to me. Police officers DMing me. Can you kind of describe the car? I'm a car person. I know what kind of car it was, what truck it was. And I said, I don't want these kids to get in trouble. I just want them to know that's not right. Don't do that. And the town, there's a whole Facebook page going on. I didn't know. They're like, at least let's support him, his cause, because we're ashamed of what our town did. And some people like, we're not surprised because I live here and I see it happening. And I had a kid drive into Illinois and pass me and did a U-turn. He goes, are you the kid that went through my state? He was like apologizing. He's like, I'm so sorry this happened to you. And just to let you know, we're not all like this. So it ended up being a positive thing.
Wow.
But that was the worst day for me.
It's amazing when you hear stories, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate to happen.
Yeah.
But it's also good to see that someone like yourself is a great ambassador for it. It's like, look, it almost like the way you did it was even more impactful.
Yeah. Highlighted. I wasn't not going to let that get me down because I knew my purpose of doing this run is bigger than anything coming my way. So I just said, just keep moving forward and hopefully that person changes. And one more negative thing. I don't like to talk about negative things. Yeah. I had a time in an office that was very scary. And I want to put on a record, the officers throughout the whole thing were amazing.
Amazing.
So many good ones. They were checking on you. Some people, we got the police calling us every day pretty much. There's a runner on the road. Police call on you. And there's an officer that came in earlier. He's like, I'm so sorry for wasting your time. Someone called. They make a call. We got to show up. Go ahead. Have a good day. He was annoyed that he's seeing me. This guy's just trying to run. Why are people calling police? There's a runner on the road. And
they're not running Missouri or what is it?
And that was in Missouri actually. I think that was early days on. I don't know if it was New Mexico, Arizona, but Belle also would have a police pull her over every day. And sometime I'd be in front of her and, I had this incident that scared me where a police officer was coming. Prior to that, police officer would have been just incredible. So I thought it was the same thing. I just give everybody the benefit of the doubt. And I'm like excited, like seeing a police officer waving. They've asked to take pictures with me and they've seen me on social media. So this guy come out of the car very serious and say, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm running." He said, "We just got a call. There's a runner on the road. What are you doing out there?" He was annoyed. And then hands on the gun right away, clip the leather. I'm like, whoa. So I started panicking, showing my stick. I have a safety vest on, running across the country, just mumbling. So Belle is behind. I can see her. But she's thinking, he's just checking on us because that's what the police were doing, which is great. That's her job. And she's just chilling over there. And I'm scared to whip her in because I'm thinking, I don't want the police to think she's an accomplice. And he might think I'm getting help. And so I see white couple far back. And they're waiting patiently. And they got impatient. Started coming. I knew they were waiting for me because in the middle of nowhere, people don't really wait in the road like that.
No.
And it looked like their car was bad. It looked like a newer car. But yeah. They got impatient as I'm telling the police the story. He's like, "Where's your ID?" I said, my ID is in my RV 5 miles ahead if you want to follow me. He's like, "What's your birthday? What's this and that?" Looking at me in the system. And they come over and they're like, "Whoa, we're so excited. Our son told us you're going to be on this road. We want to take pictures with you." They had a $100 bill to donate. That's 100 pairs of shoes. $1 equals one pair of shoes. So the police bought the story. And then he got a little relaxed. And I was just like, and then I'm like telling Belle to come in now. She always come with her camera, getting content. I always get pictures with all the officers. She had no idea at this point until everybody left. And then I told her. And the police had asked me, "Can I take a picture with you too?" So I think it was the first time in my life I had to fake a smile. Because
you were scared. You were like, "What just happened?"
I'm sitting with this police like smiling. She's like, but inside me, I'm burning. So when he left, I couldn't move for 10 minutes. Everything just hit me. I was shook. I'm like, did that just happen? Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. So that was a scary moment. Yeah.
What did you just think?
Yeah, I have pictures of the officer. Like, I don't know. He might hear the story.
He unclipped.
He had his hand and he didn't take it out of the gun. I won't say it. He had his hand and that there's something holding the gun down.
Right.
Yeah. And he's like coming in, very serious. Maybe he had a long day, tough day.
Well, hope it was, man. Because you're running in a lot of happiness. So.
Yeah. And I saw him later in the town. And I'm like, why would people call police on a runner? There's a town 5 miles. I could have been just coming from there exercising. And sometime I didn't even need those poles. I just did it for safety. So people might think he's just going hiking. Or some people thought I was crazy. They would be like, you know, there's no snow. There's no skiing. Skiing season's over. I'm like, yeah. And I tell them exactly what I'm doing. They think I'm even more crazy.
Man, I don't wish that upon anyone. But, you know, it sounds like you are able to handle yourself very, very well.
Yeah, and then I would say there's so many nice officers too. I'm not saying all police are bad, but that was a scary one.
Wow.
It could have been anybody. I would have been like, okay.
Jesus. Yeah. Okay, so switching gears from positive to something negative to something you're more relative to, which is positive.
Yeah.
Mate, like, how far out were, like, you're probably a few days out. What was it like to know how close you were to achieving your goal?
It got harder as closer you get.
Really?
Yeah, because Pennsylvania kicked my butt. Like, I went from, like, getting destroyed in the mountain. I felt like I was a ping pong ball getting smacked between mountains.
Wow.
And we get out of that, and you're like, okay, there's rolling hills. They're not fun. And then you kind of get your groove. I went from running 876 miles in the month of March to running 1,225 miles in April with one day less. So I actually picked up a lot of distance.
Wow.
And then you get to Pennsylvania the last day before you hit New Jersey. And Appalachian is not far, so it was just like the hill, Achilles flared up, like swollen, I could barely move. That was rough, but knowing that you're that close, it's like, you're 10 days out. 10 days feels forever. 5 days out. It really didn't hit me, literally, till like the Saturday where I knew I was going to end in New Jersey and be in front of my house and sleep in front of my house. I slept in the RV still before I finished in New York City the following day. So those days were like, it felt like it was close, it started just dragging. Cause to me, 10 days out of 84 days is nothing, but I'm the one who has to go through the whole day. So we're talking about going from morning till 11 p.m. at night. I have to go through that duration of each day. And at that point, your body's depleted, you're beat up. It just felt like it was never going to happen.
Wow.
Mentally.
Far out.
Yeah.
So you slept at your place the night before.
Yeah, because I ended that run at the park behind my house. And Robbie was in the opposite side of the park.
Was he?
Yeah, that's how he ended the night before he went to New York City.
Wow.
Yeah, the difference was just literally opposite of the park. So similar route. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I made sure I didn't sleep in my bed. I said, for good old sake, I gotta sleep in the RV. Okay. I gotta do everything in the RV.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because I knew that was gonna be the last night.
And so then you went from there, you just like, go up in the morning, kiss some friends.
Yeah. The town showed up, like over 300 people, the town mayor, deputy mayor, fire truck with a big American flag. I had no idea this happening. Casey showed up at my front, my doorstep. What? I had Casey Neistat showed up at my house the morning. So it was just an awesome morning. It was just awesome. Family, friends, and people ran with me. People were dropping in, dropping out, and we picked up more people around New York City. Got escorted out by police out of my town, escorted by NYPD. We literally took over Second Ave, I believe, partying, dancing. Every stoplight, we got to stop because they're escorting us for the crossroad. Everybody's just having a blast. Music blasting behind the car behind us with the float the Gymshark had, and it was just incredible.
So where did you finish up?
I finished up on, I think, 51st or 52nd. I don't even believe. It was like a dead end. And I saw that big finish sign. That's the same one I started with. It just said start. This one said finish. When I saw that, when I made that last turn, I don't know how I find a 7 or 7 minute pace split. I want to check on my.
You did a 7
from running 12 minute mile, like drag 10 to 12 minute mile. Literally, I saw that. I forgot about every pain because we were literally jogging. When you see the video, I just opened it up and people were trying. I see the video. People were trying to keep up with me. They couldn't even. Because they didn't even see it coming. So I just started sprinting. I said, I see this finish line. I got to get through it right now. And then I was numb to everything at that point.
And did pain. You have, when you saw that sign, or even what was like the last day like? What was the last day in general?
The last day was so, I couldn't even like, I don't think it could ever be replicated. It was just the perfect day. With so many people, perfect weather. It was 90s, but the sun, it was just amazing. Seeing people I've never seen, seeing people I've seen, family, friends, traveling from every part. My sister came from Illinois, brother came from Wisconsin. My dad wrote a note to me to be read because my dad forbade me to run. And then him being supportive of the whole thing because he sees the bigger picture. It was just a perfect day.
And so you get to the finish line.
Yeah.
And do you know what you're about to do?
Yeah, I wanted to propose. I had that plan way before starting.
So did you carry a ring across the country?
No, I actually had no clue how I was going to get a ring. So the closer I was getting, I decided to like start telling people, and I didn't even tell her mother and father till the day of because I didn't want to tell them over the phone. I didn't think that was respectful. I wanted to see them in person. Thank God I saw them the day before.
Oh, so you when you stayed over at your place, so that, that area,
told her mother the day before and told her father the day of. I'm like, I didn't call you, so I didn't give you enough time because I want to see you in person. I'm glad. I texted the dad, are you going to be here? Because if he said no, I would have to make the phone call, which I didn't want to.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah. And I told my guardian in Pennsylvania, like a day from New Jersey. And he's like, he drove to a jeweler, FaceTimed me and said, pick a ring. So my guardian.
You're running and you're picking a jewel.
Yeah. I literally have my phone on FaceTime, bells crashing. I'm like, yeah, I'm just talking to Dawa. Dawa is my guardian. Dawa Tash in Massachusetts. He's just telling me what's going on. We're talking about my friend, my good friend, who's also was, he was guardian to him too, Michelle Bhandari. We're just having conversation about something completely. And when I see her coming by, I like kind of lower my voice. So I'll stop talking completely.
Sure.
Even though it's cross the road in case she catches anything.
Yeah.
And he showed me the ring and we did it in a way where she can change the size or change the ring completely. So I had to have a ring. So he drove from Massachusetts on the bride of the day and I gave it to Robbie to carry it. And Robbie gave it to someone, a friend, Alexis, with a hydration vest that she can hide it in. And when we got to the finish line, he took it from her. And I just said, hey, Robbie. So he knew that was a signal to give me the ring.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just can imagine all the women right now swooning over this gentleman who, like, to be fair, by the sounds, this lovely young lady that is now called your fiance.
Yeah.
She's obviously,
yeah.
She's well worth the fit.
Yeah.
But like, you know, that's very special moment. Did you get like, cause it was funny cause I was watching all this on Insta Live, yeah. Right? And everyone's like, audio went out. I don't care. You can see what's going on, right? Like you know what's going on. So when it happened, man, I think the funny question I want to ask is, how did you get up from the lunge?
I don't even know. Cause I was that moment, nothing, no pain existed. The next day I was like, oh God, I made sure that I ran like late that day. I didn't want to get up early and run because my body would have thought I'm still in transcontinental mode.
Sure.
Because every run starts in the morning. So I waited till the last, till like 8 at night to make sure that I go run. So my body kind of thinks, oh, something is different now.
Amazing.
Yeah. So everything was numb at that point.
Wow.
Yeah. You're just so stuck in the moment that nothing really, you feel nothing.
That is crazy, yeah. Man. That is absolutely crazy. So you are the first black man to
travel. To run straight from LA to New York. So back in 1920, I believe. So there's a race called Race America. So there was black people involved. Yeah. There were four of them, but they were relays. They were sharing mileage.
Oh, okay, cool.
So let's say I run a segment, you run a segment.
Yep.
None of them did the mileage I did and did coast to coast by themselves. So I'm officially the first black person to run across the United States from Los Angeles to New York City. No one has done that.
And you beat your goal of 100.
And then,
actually beat your actual goal of 85.
Yeah, by one day.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And to me, when this run was happening, Robbie were like, hell, I think you might be the first black person to do this. I'm like, we did research, we looked at, I know like people don't have to have platforms to share, but there's a bookkeeper. So yeah, I think I'm 333 runner to run across the United States.
There's 333 runners who've done
it. Yeah, it looks like it's a lot too, but it's not. The perspective that Robbie gave me, he said, Mount Everest, 29,000 feet elevation. Over 10,000 people have completed that summit. He said, look at that. How many people just ran across the U.S.? That's how special it is.
That is special.
But, there hasn't been any person to do this. And I made sure I was fashion. Actually, this guy was really nice. He sent me a whole book. It's called Race America. And you'll see the African-Americans in front of it. And it's a relay. And he wrote me a note. He said, Hella, you are right. In fact, you're the first black person to run across America.
That's huge.
Some, four people have run across America as a team.
You're
and
solo.
Yeah, and they've shared the mileage and they didn't go every day. And I was the first one officially. And I think that's very important to share in a way, you know, when history is being made, it's not to kind of say bragging about it. It's more of like anyone can do anything they put their mind to. And race, your identity is very important to show who you are, what you're capable of doing, but also showing that you can be anything, gender, race, whatever it is, you can do it. So don't think that you have to be a specific way, a certain way. There's no such thing as a specific way. There's different ways. There's different people. So I thought it was very important. And then the not even black color person that's out there. Maybe a little color kid is sitting there one right now. They'll be like, oh, Hella did this. You know what? I could do something too. So I think that's the most important part of it for me to say. I've talked about it many times. And I want to keep letting people know, yeah, I was the first to do it. And humbled to be able to have the privilege to even go through the United States.
Isn't it crazy? The country that you work so hard to do something professionally in.
Yeah.
I mean, that you now just
ran through it.
Well, it's just also, you're such a grateful person.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. You know, I really mean that, man. It's like, you could have honestly packed your bags and gone this too far, but you didn't. So, I want to know firstly, How many shoes do we get?
Went through a lot.
Yeah.
In fact, some of them are still brand new because they couldn't fit me anymore. Because I went from size 10 to 11.5. So some of those shoes were useless at that point.
Wow.
Foot just swollen, wide. And we had to we're literally scared. We're trying to find the nearest running store. It'd be 200 miles away to get running shoes for me. So some shoes were overworn. And
so hang on, you went from, what was the size you went from?
Size 10 to 11.5. Yeah.
Just due to the swelling.
Swelling and elevation.
Wow.
And it's not, no shoes would fit. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't. And when I got here, I went to buy a new pair of shoes. Hoka Mach 4 is my favorite to finish in. I got 11.5 and then I went to put it on not too long ago. It's like a boat on
too,
my feet.
Too big.
Because my foot started shrinking.
But it was perfect at the time.
It was so perfect. It was like a perfect snug fit at the time.
That's crazy.
And Robbie told me his foot size never went back down.
Really?
Size in the 1.5. So I was like, are you kidding me? All these cool shoes that I love. I can't wear them
anymore.
So we got to donate it to Souls for Souls. But mine is going down. Yeah, mine is going down.
Crazy.
Yeah, which I'm happy about.
We're happy to add that to Souls for Souls. How many shoes did you end up raising for?
A lot. My neighbor actually has over 1,000 pairs in his house for me to bring.
Wow.
Yeah, and we raised a lot of money. I don't know the exact number right now, but I think it's close to the goal, if not over.
What's the goal?
The goal is $50,000.
$50,000.
Yeah. And that's technically 50,000 pairs of shoes.
Can people still donate?
Yeah, people can still donate.
Where's that?
You can go to, if you go to hellagood.com, you'll see the donate button, and it goes straight to Souls for Souls. There's no GoFundMe. I don't see anything.
Perfect.
I want to make sure that nothing comes my way.
We'll put that in the show notes as well.
Or you can go to soulsforsouls.com and you can probably search just Hella.
Yeah.
And it'll come up. And Gymshark made a shirt for me, and that sold out, which was amazing.
That's great.
Yeah, man. So the profit from that is all going to Souls for Souls.
Man, so you've got your YouTube channel, which is obviously, I love watching it. So
Thank you.
That's really exciting to watch.
Yeah.
You got your Instagram, both hella good from memory.
Yeah, so Instagram is hella good with the number 9. YouTube is just hella good.
Great.
No numbers on it.
And what have we got coming up, man? Like, obviously, you're going to continue running, and you said you're going to continue running for a very long time.
I'm going to keep running until I absolutely hate it. Yeah. I feel like when you hate something, then don't put yourself through it.
Gotcha.
It's not good for your mental piece. And I think mental health is very important.
Huge.
So till the day I'm just like, I absolutely hate this. That's okay. I'm allowing myself to break the streak. So I don't feel like pressure to do the streak. The day that I feel pressured, I'm going to stop. And I'm pretty sure I'll find something else to do.
I'm sure.
Maybe I'll swim every day.
Maybe
I'll bike every day. Yeah, or cooking. I want to be good at that. I think they'll always say I'm good at cooking. I don't think I am.
Okay, I'll do this. You and I'll go for a run.
Yeah.
I'll teach you to cook something special.
That'd be cool.
Really wonderful.
Running and cooking some vegan. That would be a nice YouTube content.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, think about it. You are thinking creatively.
Yeah.
You got the brains as well, man. That's cool. Bro.
Yeah.
I've known about you for some time. I've met you briefly once before.
Yes.
But this is, I feel... the start of something truly special.
Yeah,
I have the utmost respect for you and your gratitude. So,
thank you.
Bro, thank you so much for being part of the Epic Table.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Yes.
And when we run, just make sure you slow down for me.
No, I'm good. My legs are heavy, so I'm going to have you slow down for me. I haven't been going fast at all.
Appreciate you,
man. Thank you for
Thanks
having
so
me.
Much.
Thank you.